Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today, and this is Radio ITVT. We're at ITVT.com, and you can find these podcasts at ITVT.com/podcast. I'm also the co-producer of the TV of Tomorrow Show Awards and the event, which is TVOTShow.com, happening June 13th and 14th. So I am absolutely thrilled to have a guest today who actually has already spoken at TVT last December in New York City, but I thought more people have to know what he's up to because not only is he quote-unquote a YouTube star, but a great guy and doing interesting work and has so much to, I think, tell the community about what's possible, how to make a life, in the online world. So welcome to the show, Mike Chen.
Hi, Tracy. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks again for coming to TVOT last December, and I want you to be able to reach more people. But so let's place what you do in context. If people have read our newsletter, they'll see that you do these food, videos that go all over the internet. I mean, I mostly see you on YouTube, but you are reaching millions of people every day. Can you let's talk a little bit about some of the brands that you offer, number one being Strictly Dumpling, right?
Yes. Yep.
You actually have a number of channels, and then why don't you talk a little bit about each? I'll just name them quickly. Strictly Dumpling, something called Mikey Chen, Beyond Science, Chen Dynasty, and wait a minute. This the Che News? The Che News? How do you pronounce that?
The Chen News.
Chen News. Right. The large N. And is that it?
There's I have a bunch. It's kind of funny why I have so many. I also have a cooking show called For the Love of Food, but it's spelled P-H-O.
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I just started another new channel called Yeet with Mikey. There is a reason behind all the madness. But yeah, I have quite a few channels.
I don't know how you manage all of that work. And, you know, you really have to be someone who likes to talk because you can talk. You are a good talker. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I do like talking. It's becoming something I find, it does get easy. I used to be actually quite an introvert. So throughout college, I really didn't have many friends. I was probably the shyest kid in class. I remember one time in speech class, I was so nervous. I was rocking back and forth. And my speech teacher actually told me in his evaluations at the end that I was making him seasick because I was rocking back and forth so much. So this is quite an interesting change of careers for me doing this.
Well, it actually reminds me of myself a little bit, although you're a better talker. But people who start off shy, I think maybe, you know, we work at it and we put ourselves out there and you know, try to be an extrovert from being so shy. So I understand that.
Because we have so much stuff we want to say, we just never said it. And then it's always just coming out.
So now Strictly Dumpling, I would say, is your main channel, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And according to YouTube, you have 1.1 million subscribers.
Yep.
And all your other channels, well, Beyond Science says it's got like 1.9 million.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, like the reason I have so many channels is to me, they're shows. Like each channel to me is a particular show that covers a topic that is, in my opinion, independent of the other channels. Like even though I have different food shows, but they're different food shows. It's kind of like there's Beat Bobby Flay and there's like, you know, Iron Chef. So there's different shows. So I kind of treated channels like that. And that's why I have so many.
So why, I want to hear about each of these channels, just like a one line description, if you don't mind, but I'm also curious, you know, why you're doing this. Why did you decide to do all this? And then tell me about each of the channels.
Sure. Well, I started doing all this because, well, I was at Morgan Stanley doing stuff that, that just makes people's head explode. So after about a year of that, I decided if I kept doing this, I was going to go, you know, my hair's going to turn white in 2 years and I'm probably going to look 80 and my Asian genes that usually keeps people young looking. It's not going to help me there. So I left, and then I wanted to do something meaningful. So I started doing human rights work, because a lot of people don't know this, but there's a lot of people actually suffering in China, because right now we hear China's growing. It's so powerful and rich, and it is. But there's also a huge gap between the super wealthy and the super poor. And there's a lot of persecution going on, a lot of religious persecution, political persecution. And I myself practice a meditation called Falun Gong, which is being persecuted in China right now. So I started learning. I'm sorry.
There's people always lined up protesting in front of the Chinese embassy here every day in San Francisco.
Yeah, and there's a good reason for that. It's a meditation exercise that started out in 92. It got really, really popular. 100 million people was practicing it in like 7 years, because everyone was getting so healthy practicing it. The government actually supported it. But then once they realized 100 million people were practicing it, they started to ban it. And in 99, they announced the persecution, which meant that if you practice this meditation, you were going to be sent to prison or labor camps, and subjected to systematic torture. And just in the last decade, human rights watchdogs actually found out that China is actually one of the biggest hubs for organ transplants in the world, although China doesn't have like an organ donation process or system. And that's because they were executing prisoners and selling their organs. So you can go to China and get an organ in 2 weeks. And a lot of these organs were coming, they're not coming from, you know, people who were in jail for drug-related offenses. They were coming from healthy people, basically people that are labeled prisoners of conscience, who are in jail not because they really committed any crime, but because of their political beliefs or religious beliefs, or they are practitioners of Falun Gong. So it's still going on today. It's just covered up really, really well. So I spent a lot of time doing that. Working with nonprofit organizations. And then I started doing YouTube because, first of all, I wanted to talk about traditional Chinese culture, which really is kind of gone downhill a lot after the Cultural Revolution. And the beauty of 5,000 years, you know, it's really not in the spotlight anymore, even in China. So I wanted to talk about that. And then I wanted also to talk about what's happening in China in regards to the persecution that's going on. And that's how I got into YouTube. So I started doing that. And then that led to my other channels. I started doing Beyond Science because I believe in a lot of stuff. Like, I believe there are a lot of things in the world that are unexplainable. I'm not like, what people consider like, oh, you're, you know, Tim Hat Wearer. No, that's nothing like that. But like, for me, I just feel like there's so many things in the world that's kind of mysterious and unexplained, and I want to explore those topics. And that's something I've always been interested in. And of course, food is my love, my one and, you know, probably the longest love of my life. Don't tell my girlfriend that. but it's just something that has never let me down. Yeah, unless you go to McDonald's. And then it's just, you know, something I've always felt such a deep connection to, probably because I eat it every day.
Food I don't think ever lets you down unless you get fat. And you are not fat. You are fit. And that's always the big mystery. Why you never get fat? Because everybody who's listening, you have to see his Strictly Dumpling channel. He has buffets and huge amounts of meat and fish. And I mean, I don't know how you stay slim. But all right. I interrupted you. Go ahead, Mike.
No. I was going to say this secret is because I'm Asian. That's it. Like, we Asians, we have a, it's just like, it helps a lot, but also you got to work out every single day.
Well, I'm doing that too, but I'm trying to lose weight, but it's hard. All right. Anyway, so let's go back to Strictly Dumpling just quickly, because I don't think we explained that really. That's you do all kinds of things on there, and the categories you organize your videos into are all you can eat buffets, which you love, and you do them all over the world, and Vietnam and Peru and Taipei, and these are just the first four ones on your screen. There's so many in New York and all over the United States, and night markets around the world. I really enjoy looking at those. Mm-hmm. I also enjoyed, was that where I read the the Mekong? You went on the Mekong in Vietnam and had food. On boats and things. That was all very exciting. And I know you're going to go into it, but something called Meat Paradise and Korea, Singapore. It goes on and on and on. But what you do, what he does is he goes around and he tries foods. He gets obviously a lot of help. Somebody points out what are all of the interesting places to go, and then he'll try all these things. So, and your other channels other than Beyond Science, like Chen Dynasty, is more about
Chinese culture,
ancient Chinese culture, and so you're busy. You're busy. I don't know how you can fit all then and travel around the world as you do. In fact, you just flew in from LA. I mean, flew in from Asia, I think, right? You were in, where were you? The Philippines?
Oh, no. I flew from New York to LA, and then I'm leaving to go to Japan in a couple of days.
Uh-oh, sushi heaven. Okay, so, all right, let's try to place this in context. I mean, let's say we look at this one video just right in front of me. Legendary all-you-can-eat buffet in Manila in the Philippines, right? And like I said, he had 1.1 million subscribers, but you've got 2 million views. Most of your videos are somewhere between 500,000 and multiple millions of views.
Yes, yes.
And then you have all of these other channels. So how do you account for this? Why are you so popular, Mike?
Well, honestly, I have no idea. It started off as I was in the Bacchanal buffet one day, and I remember with my iPhone 4, and I remember thinking I love this buffet so much. I wish I could share with people just how much I love it. And of course, being somebody who is kind of a loner and don't have a lot of friends, who am I going to share it with? So I just recorded it and I put it on YouTube. And at that time, I only had a smaller channel, and it just took off. And that's when I kind of realized, hey, people actually enjoy watching me eat food, which is something I never thought anyone would enjoy, because my mom told me always, hey, you eat like a pig. Nobody wants to see you. So it's really, a mystery. And it's also a blessing, of course, to have so many people who actually watch the videos. And I'm thankful every day for that. Again, as to why, I don't know. But for me, all I try to do is be as authentic as I can. And, like I said, it's a love affair with food. So every time I'm eating food, I feel like it's almost a date, it's like,
you get all emotional about before you're about to eat something important.
Yeah, you do. You feel that butterfly in your stomach when, like that video you mentioned, the legendary buffet, that was 4 years in the making. I heard about that thing 4 years before I went, and I've been wanting to eat there, ever since then. And before I was, waiting for the buffet to open, literally I was nervous. I was so excited. It's a feeling I can't really explain it, but that's the passion I feel like it's in my videos, and it's all real. I am really that excited to eat something awesome.
I actually really enjoyed watching you do the comparison between Kobe beef, the expensive, and the cheap beef. I know that's not very exotic, but it's sort of an interesting thing to watch. You really enjoy the best cut of steak out there. But you do all kinds of amazing videos showcasing ethnic food from all over the world, all kinds of fish and I don't know, all kinds of stuff that I personally cannot eat. You are obviously not a vegetarian here. You'll try anything.
No, I call myself a meatitarian. I eat a lot of, the one you just mentioned, the Kobe beef, in the history of my eating experiences, that was the most mind-blowing bite of anything I have ever eaten in my life. It's just so transformative. Everything you eat afterwards, every single piece of beef and steak you eat afterwards, you keep coming back to that one moment in your life. And that's why I love food so much, is I feel like I remember all the biggest benchmarks in my life because of food. It just sounds kind of sad, but it's true. And the Kobe beef was just, you remember the emotions you feel, you don't forget your first love, right? You don't forget your first kiss. Mm-hmm. And again, it sounds really dumb, but I don't forget it when I have such a wonderful, mind blowing experience, when I bite into something that just, gives you an out of body experience.
Well, what I'm trying to understand though is how you can get all this stuff done. And the fact that this is probably a business for you, right? How long ago did you start this, and when exactly did you realize that this was going to not just make you popular amongst millions of people, but really be potentially a way to earn a living?
Well, how do I do all this? I ask myself that. I was just asking myself that yesterday. I
mean, you have a team, right? They came to our show. You have a group.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have a team. I have to have a team. Otherwise it just doesn't work. I mean, I try to do everything by myself. Actually, as early as, middle of last year, I still was trying to do everything myself, and it was just impossible. Like I can't do it. And that was working every single day, maybe, upwards of, 18 hours a day. Literally sometimes you just like, you're done filming, you're editing, you're posting, you're writing. It's just nonstop. And I was doing everything. At that point, it wasn't even like I was thinking about the money aspect of it or the business aspect of it. It was just more like, this is so fun. Like I love doing this. And then after a while it got to be too much. Like, okay, I gotta scale it back. I gotta, you know, get some help. So I got a team of people that helped me. And also, like, I feel like, at least for Strictly Dumpling, I feel like, you know, people deserve better content. Like they deserve more and more quality video. So I wanted to do something where it feels more like a TV show. So I got a team that goes with me to places as, you know, we started doing this, I think, a few months back. But yeah, I mean, when I started doing this, all this, obviously, it being in a business never crossed my mind. And I think it was about 2 years in where I was like, you know what, this could be a thing. Like, I mean, I don't know when the whole YouTube thing might disappear. And obviously you got to diversify yourself, you know, beyond YouTube, but currently, like, I mean, this could be really interesting. And this is obviously something I enjoy a lot. And it just kind of worked out. So it's working out right now. And I don't know, maybe one day it'll just, you know, I have to go and like, I don't know, go back to finance or something. I'm not really sure. I hope not. But as of right now, yeah, this is great.
Have you been approached by any networks out there who might want to?
Yeah. Actually, I had some great talks with the Food Network last year and this year and going on, right now even. Hopefully, like I would love to, you know, be on a network show, mainly because I feel like I just want to create like a really awesome show. And to do that, I feel like if I got to work with some incredible producers, incredible camera people, I think it could just be just fantastic. And it's not like even just networks, like right now there's a lot more platforms out there than just the traditional cable networks, and obviously, and so, you know, Amazon, Netflix, like anybody, I feel like there's a lot of opportunities out there to create something great. And to me, like, it all comes from the fact that I just want to create really, really a good content and fun content, and that's like my main drive to work with somebody else.
I mean, your production values have improved, I think, but to what extent, you know, well, maybe you want to be more slick, but I mean, you know, the graphics and the sort of the personal touch, that's appealing to a lot of people. Do you think about losing that and being more slick working with the networks, or do you think that will grow your traffic even more, or your, you know?
Well, I think it's, I think there's something that can be done, that's kind of meeting in the middle. Because I feel like, if I was to do a show with a network, I would hope it has a lot of personal touches, like, you know, interaction between the crew, interaction with, you know, with locals, something that, that maybe I can bring from, the vlogs and the YouTube stuff, maybe onto the networks itself. At the same time, having the resources to, you know, be able to afford like multiple cameras and having people work with you that's been filming for, you know, a long time, or having producers with you that can, you know, help put a show together that that's maybe like, I'm not the most creative person out there. I'm really not. So to be able to work with other really creative people and just making something better, I feel like it's always something that's really attractive to me.
I think you're terribly creative, and you're charming, and you make it a fun experience. You make everybody feel like, you know, they're eating with you, like that tower of lobsters. That's insane.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Tracy. Yeah, it's for I guess for a creator. I just always wanted to do better, because I think I think my viewers deserve better. And I can't stop trying to be better, because I think that if I'm ever satisfied, I feel like it's just, that's not good. So I want to be always trying to do something, you know, that's better.
Do you ever think about, instead of doing nonfiction like this, or travel, what would you call it? Travel nonfiction, experiential nonfiction. Do you see yourself ever doing a show like with with narrative to it?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm open to a lot of things. Right now it's just really fun doing the show and just working, you know, on this topic of food and travel. But yeah, absolutely. I'm open to trying a lot of new things, because it's really fun. You know, I'm having such a blast right now. I feel like the other fields, getting into maybe scripted stuff and whatever, that's actually something we did a lot on the Chen Dynasty channel. Where we did a lot of scripted skits and everything. That was a blast. So yeah, I'm definitely open to a lot of all the new things.
Yeah, that's right. You do have these little graphic storytelling pieces that talk about ancient Chinese culture, which is interesting. I still want to hook you up with my friend who's doing a lot of stuff about ancient Chinese culture another time. All right, so the VR stuff. Are you exploring that 360 VR? I haven't really seen too much of that. You're not really using a 360 camera.
No, I haven't really. I mean, I mean, honestly, like for food, it's at least for, you know, what I'm doing, it's more about the close-ups. It's more about the kind of the intimate imagery of the food itself. I didn't really feel like the 360 stuff would be like a good fit for that. But for the travel things, I think that's something I will eventually look into when that becomes more common. So it's that's the thing. Like right now, there's so much new stuff coming out. I feel like I'm getting like a whole new set of cameras every single year. So it's almost a little too much for me to keep up with. But you know, it's exciting. I do personally love VR. I have the HTC at home. I use a lot, so it's exciting where everything is going. But personally, right now, I haven't gotten into it too much.
So, what platforms are you on besides YouTube? Or are you only on YouTube?
No, I'm on YouTube. Obviously, Facebook. I just went into a deal with Twitch. Mm-hmm. Really excited to do live streaming with Twitch. Creating repurposing my content for things like Instagram. I also started working with a company called Gaia for the Beyond Science stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I feel like YouTube is great. It's been my home for so long, but at the same time, like I want to branch out. I want to be able to, you know, do things, reach new audiences, be on different platforms. So I feel like this is the year for me to do that.
Have you ever considered making what you do an app, you know, like that would open up on an Apple TV deck or Roku deck, and people could just open up the, you know, Strictly Dumpling channel?
Yeah, you know what?
You could do that now on Roku. You could just do that. But, you know, if you want to get top placement, you have to make a deal.
Yeah, I have been talking to some over the top. They call it over the top.
Yeah, OTT. Company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have been talking to some of them, and I think I've met a couple that I'm pretty excited about. So we are going to do that this year, where I'm going to be my show is going to be on their apps, the Strictly Dumpling show is actually on Amazon Prime right now, but. I think that series, what they took was probably not the best representation of that show, because they took a lot of shots that were, you know, a lot of videos that were filmed on my iPhone. So I'm trying to replace it with some of the newer stuff. But yeah, I think that's a new area that a lot of people are getting into. I don't know exactly too much about it in terms of what the reach is and what the analytics on that is right at this point. But it is something I think we're going to get into, definitely this year. I think maybe even the next month or so.
Have you been affected by the algorithm changes and apocalypse and all these, problems
with
demonetization? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned that at the conference, for example,
at TVOT.
One of our videos. Yeah, exactly. At one of our videos, it was a video about Brazilian steakhouse. It was all you can eat Brazilian barbecue, right? and that was probably the biggest example because it was demonetized for so long. That thing, I mean,
you have 2.1 million views on that right now.
Right, right. And it took over 24 hours for that to be undemonetized. So when it first went out, so for the first 24 hours, it wasn't earning any revenue. And it was so frustrating because I was tweeting YouTube. I was like, come on, what's wrong with this video? And their response was, well, someone's going to manually, you know, request a manual review. And the manual review didn't happen for over 24 hours. And that was a huge video for us. And there are other, like, I just got one video right now that was demonetized. Our latest video in India was demonetized for a while. And now what we do is we make sure it's green before we actually publish it. But sometimes even when you publish it, like the Brazilian barbecue video, it was green. But then when we published it, it didn't turn yellow. So when the apocalypse hit, it did affect us. It probably didn't affect us as much as channels that were more considered like, you know, more maybe more adult content or has
political,
more vulgar language.
Political news. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Or something more sensitive than what we do. I mean, we just do food and travel. So it didn't affect us as much, but 100% did affect us.
Why do you think that you would have been picked out? Do you think it's just an algorithm anomaly or do you think?
I have no clue. Like it's so strange, right? Because a food channel that absolutely has, I mean, it's just food, you know, it's, you know, there's no even vulgar language there because I mean, it's not like I'm trying to do it for the algorithm's sakes. It's, I don't, you know me, I don't use that kind of language anyway in my day-to-day life. So it's strange to me why, you know, those things would be picked off. And it could be anything like from misplacing a comma and them reading like words that may be, you know, deemed inappropriate or sensitive keywords or something in my description. So I really have no clue. But it's a shame that it happens because obviously this is like the main source of income for so many people. But for me, like why it happens on the food channel, I really have no clue.
And do you find that you're getting emails from people or somehow contacted to say that they're not getting notified when you upload something because they've subscribed, they've clicked the bell? Because nowadays, of course, you have to click this bell thing next to the subscribe button. Yeah. Do you find that people are being bumped off your subscription lists? I hear other people complaining about that.
All the time. I get messages. I get comments on every single video. I get messages in my Instagram, my Facebook, email to me all the time. People are like, how come I didn't get a notification? I clicked the bell. How come I didn't get a notification? And there's nothing I can do about that. There's nothing anyone can do about that. And then according to YouTube, it's functioning fine. There's nothing wrong with it. So I have no clue, but I get that message, that comment all the time.
I just saw a video of the, I guess, three people who were involved with making those decisions and managing the algorithm. And they said they are trying not to, quote unquote, spam all your subscribers when you upload a video and normally they would be notified. They're trying not to spam everybody. So they only send notifications to people who are most likely going to probably click through. So it's not a done deal if you click that bell, that you are actually going to get notified.
Yeah,
and they say that they just think this is going to be better for people. I don't know where they came up with that, but
yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. Because I mean, if you subscribe to something, I mean, if you voluntarily ask for something, then you should get whatever you ask for. I mean, spamming is more like I didn't sign up for this promotion from JetBlue. Like, you know, that's more spamming to me. Like, but like when I ask for it, when I say, hey, yeah, JetBlue, give me your newest discount codes or whatever, that's something I requested. So I should get it. So I don't understand why, you know, they're making that decision, but it's unfortunate.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about monetization, if you're okay with that.
Sure.
Okay. So obviously they are monetizing off of your videos and you're making money from advertising, but are you making more money from advertising? Or I know, for example, you're starting a hot oil business.
Yep.
And I'm assuming you get paid to show up at some of these locations to try out their stuff, or maybe you don't. I mean, it's completely interesting and it's inspiring to see that, you know, there's a complex opportunity here for business. So definitely curious. How you make this work for you?
Well, the hot oil hasn't launched yet, but like it's something that I've always been passionate about. I want to introduce people to what it is and the uses of it. Obviously, you know, my recipes are completely free online. You can make it yourself, but I'm trying to make some versions that maybe is a little creative and such. But that stuff is more down the road, maybe later this year. So it hasn't really, you know, I'm not benefiting financially from that at all at this point. But in terms of sponsorships, for me, like, I don't do a lot of sponsorships. If you look at my videos, like I rarely do sponsorships, and that's because I turn down maybe, you know, 90% of them.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of embedded brand stuff.
No, I really don't do much at all. So it's, for me, like, it's more about the right fit. Like, I will do it. Like, for example, a couple of the biggest brands I work with, 23andMe. I love, because, you know, I'm like part Korean. I just found out.
You took the test?
I took the test. Yeah, I'm part Korean, which, you know, that's pretty fun. So now that when I'm in Korea, when they ask me, "Are you Korean?"
You can't blame all your gene luck on being Chinese, though.
I benefit from the Korean gene as well, I guess. But because I feel like that company really fits well with me, because looking for, you know, exploring heritages and cultures and whatnot, and going to different parts of the world, and like maybe going to Korea for the first time, knowing that I'm part Korean, it just fits really well with my videos. I'm doing some sponsorships with Grubhub, which actually is an app I use all the time, so it's a fit. But then, like, I was offered, you know, underwear. So, like, I'm like, well, that's not really me. Like, what am I gonna say? Like, hey, this is comfortable. Like, that's kind of doesn't fit into any discussion that I have ever. I don't really do any games. So, I mean, I play app games, but unless it's one of the games that I play, like, I'm not gonna endorse. I just feel like it's part of being authentic. Like, I'm not gonna, you know, tell someone to try something if I don't really use it myself. I'm not going to, you know, recommend or sponsor something that I'm not 100%. I don't 100% buy into. I feel like it's just kind of being responsible as an influencer.
Speaking of being an influencer, have you been approached, or are you part of any sort of influencer organization or, you know, agency?
No, I mean, I get approached all the time about that, but I feel like, after talking to some of them, I feel like it's not a good fit for me, mainly because, their deals are always based on a percentage of your income, regardless of what they bring in every single month, which I feel like is kind of crazy. Because let's say they want 10% of all your, you know, ad revenue every single month, regardless of any deals. And I feel like that's kind of asking a lot, without the promise of ever really delivering.
There's no incentive.
Anything.
Yeah, there's no incentive.
Right. So I really can't be on board with any of that. And that's something that, you know, they all ask for.
Can you say if you're making more money from ad revenues or?
Yeah. Definitely more ad revenues right now, because I'm not doing that much sponsorships. But again, hopefully that changes, because again, your ad revenue is so dependent on what YouTube does. And that's kind of dangerous. So I would really like to kind of lean off that more. So I started doing, these are just small number stuff, but like, you know, we have our own line of t-shirts, the hot oil thing that's coming, hopefully that'll be something big. We have our own line of woks coming out later, I think next month, even they'll be here.
Wow.
I just want to get into something, you know, that's not so reliant on YouTube, because you never know what's going to happen with this.
I mean, if you had something to say to YouTube to improve your experience, or, you know, to change what they're doing to, you know, help influencers better, what would you say?
I feel like it's just more transparency. Like, we want to know why certain things are the way they are. Like, the algorithm, like, we don't really know much. I mean, we do, like, people who are experienced YouTubers, we know what to write in terms of, like, that will give us the best chance to maybe be viral or be on the trending page or whatnot. But we don't really know exactly what goes into that. We don't know, like, there's not enough explanation, I think, about the whole demonetization thing. There's not enough explanation, I think, about the whole, the notification, the bell thing. Like, what do people exactly have to do to receive notification all the time? Like, a lot of these decisions are being made. They're just being made, you know, and then we hear about it later. And we don't really understand or get the full explanation behind it. So, and that kind of makes us, I guess, at least for me, a little bit wary and a little bit want to jump on another platform and try to build a following somewhere else, just in case this ship kind of, I don't know, eventually maybe sink. I don't know.
Well, I hear that YouTube is, you know, supporting the mainstream media and mainstream channels sometimes, that some people are finding that they won't see their other videos listed on the side. They'll see mainstream channels. I don't know if that's happening for everybody, but I'm just wondering out loud, if there is some kind of shift going on, maybe they're being paid by those larger brands, you know, to highlight, to, you know, make the algorithm work in their favor versus, like, you know, upstart influencers like you who are generating your own content. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That's, like, again, it's stuff that we don't really know what's happening. And I do appreciate, like, you know, I just got a new partnership manager. He's been great. He's, you know, telling me a lot of things that I should work on my channel to make it better, which I really do appreciate. But there are certain questions, like, you know, that I just don't have the answer to, and neither does he. And I don't know who knows on YouTube. So, yeah, there are still a lot of unanswered stuff there.
Well, do you see that, are you able to support your team? And I mean, it sounds to me like you're growing, you're making some good money, according to various websites out there who try to estimate what you're making.
Oh, really?
Okay. Well, I'm not going to necessarily list what these organizations say that you make, but it sounds like it's, you know, that you're able to do this. But you never actually answered whether or not all these restaurants that you visit all over the world, do they fly you? Do they wine? They dine you? They house you? I mean, that's a lot of money if you're having to pay for it yourself.
No, they do not. I actually do not accept any sort of payments or sponsorship from any restaurants. There's a lot of restaurants that wants to, that contact me about it, but my show is all about, you know, being honest about the food and whether it's good or not, and recommending it based on its own merits and not based on whether somebody paid me. So I do not accept any sponsorships from restaurants. Like, wherever I fly to, wherever I go to, that's my own money. A lot of times I don't even tell the restaurant owner I'm coming, just so I you know, sometimes when you do tell them you're coming, they stand right next to you listening to everything you say. So I just want to have an unbiased meal, and I can give my own, you know, fully honest opinion about a food.
All right. Well, that sounds good. I feel like I'm watching a more honest experience. I always thought you were being paid to show up, but that's great. Oh, no. That's good to know. I still enjoy it anyway. So, but what was your, is the Kobe beef your top good eating experience, or is there any other experience that you just can never forget?
Oh, Kobe beef, my number one. Actually, I made a list of my top eating experiences of 2018 because I was actually going to do a video about that. But Kobe beef is definitely my number one. Pho, having an authentic bowl of pho in Vietnam is just, it's just the greatest. I mean, it's so insanely mind-blowing.
I was like, we can sure do a whole show, what makes authentic pho, but I wouldn't say I'm an expert to know.
No, I mean, it's, if you love pho, and if you never, I mean, if you,
we can get it out in San Francisco, no problem, but I wouldn't know if it was authentic or not. I mean,
oh, you got to go to Vietnam and try. I mean, the great thing about Vietnam is like, it's so cheap to go there. I mean, maybe the airfare might be a little expensive, but it's so cheap to stay there and eat there. The food is just some of the most magnificent I've ever had. And then Singapore.
No, you were in Saigon having some massive buffet, right? Huge, massive buffet. Oh. And I'm thinking, wait, wasn't this supposed to be a communist country? But I know Vietnam has become very, very, commercialized.
Yeah.
I was curious.
No, that buffet is the best buffet I've ever been to in my life. Like in all my travels, that's my number one buffet. I mean, for $50, all you can eat lobster cooked 18 or something like that, like a dozen different ways, fresh for you. And having like dishes that are made by gourmet, like gourmet dishes on a buffet.
I did not know that cheese covered lobster was a Chinese tradition. I thought,
oh, we do that a lot. If you ever go to a Chinese wedding, you're going to get a cheese covered lobster. I mean,
I didn't see that at the last Chinese wedding I went to. They served me duck heads on, and duck tongues and things like that, chicken heads.
Oh, you got to eat a good duck tongue. Like, I mean, that'll open your eye.
No, I couldn't do that.
That helps you talk better once you eat a duck tongue.
No, Richard loves Chinese food. I mean, when he goes to a Chinese restaurant, he finds the most serious things there, and they are always saying to him, are you sure you want to eat this? Because he's this big English guy. He's 6'5", And they're like, are you sure you want this pig intestine thing? He's like, yes, yes, yes. Because, you know, English people eat some serious food. Serious, scary food.
You got it. I really respect Richard for doing that. But if you're able to open your mind and just kind of have the guts to like do it, you'll find, speaking of guts, you got to eat some guts. But that's like some of the greatest food you'll find. Just be able to open your mind. I'm not like Andrew Zimmer. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you bring is tasty, but I'll try most things.
Richard will eat that. He likes to have eyeballs. He likes to go to this Peruvian place here in San Francisco. You can get eyeballs.
Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. He might be more adventurous than me.
I wish you guys could travel together. I'm sure he'd have a lot of fun with you. But you didn't give me your whole list, but do you want to provide a list now, or do you want to give us a text list maybe? Or?
Oh yeah. I mean, I could email you my list.
Okay.
I actually have it. I just don't know where it is right now.
But what's the top bad experience then?
Bad experience. Well, I just got like, really bad food poisoning like in India.
That's one of my questions. Don't you ever get food poisoning?
Yeah, I got food poisoning twice. Once in India and once in Peru. And India one was pretty bad. I took me a couple weeks to get over that. I mean, the food in India was fantastic, but yeah, that food poisoning was not fun.
You must have to get a lot of shots before you travel from malaria.
No, I don't get any shots. I think you should. I really. God. Don't. I'm kind of risking a little bit.
And I guess one of my last questions is, how many countries have you been to, and where are you going next?
I've been to over 20 countries. I think maybe 20 or 25 around. My next one, well, obviously, I told you guys I'm going to Japan in a couple days. Mm-hmm. And then the country I'm going to next that I haven't been before is Indonesia. Mm-hmm. So I can't wait to go there. It's going to be a couple of weeks spent in Indonesia, traveling to the different cities. Cannot wait. I'm so excited to go.
I guess I semi lied, but any pointers for San Francisco for people who come here for TVOT? Any restaurant?
Other than,
I guess that hot pot place down here, but I don't know. Anything that stands out?
Yeah. I mean, if you guys never had hot pot, go to iPot. It's probably one of my favorite hot pot places in the country. Just a fantastic place for hot pot.
Oh, Mike, after we saw your show, we went out and bought our own hot pot.
Oh, did you?
To make it ourselves. We did.
Oh, nice. How
we
was
went
it?
To a Chinese store, grocery store, because we live out in the outer Sunset, and you can get lots of Chinese stuff. We want to go over to iPop, but it's always so crowded.
It is so crowded. Yeah. But no, doing it at home is fantastic. It's very intimate. The only thing I hate about doing it at home is the cleanup process. Because hot pot gets a little greasy and gets a little spilly. So I never like cleaning up. But eating at home is definitely more comfortable.
Well, Richard's become a little mini sort of chef. And part of the reason is because he watches one of, your channel. And he gets inspired. And then he has learned a lot about cooking from watching you. Oh, and I don't know if you know who Chef John is. Chef John, he loves Chef John. All right.
Yeah, he told me about. Yeah, no, that's really good to hear.
All right. Well, I think that's it for me. Unless you have any other things that you want to mention to our listeners, but I mean, you've got, like I said, millions of views. I think I had a number here: 166,736,63 views. 166, almost 167 million views.
Wow. sounds like a fake number almost.
I don't know, but we wish you well and good luck on your next adventure, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you soon. I'll be watching, so you can go to Strictly Dumpling on YouTube, and then he has all his other channels: Pho, The Love of Food, Eat with Mikey Chen, Beyond Science, The Chen Dynasty.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it so much, Tracy. Really great talking to you.
You too. Have a safe flight.
Thank you so much. I'll see you soon. I'll see you
soon. All right, take care.
Yeah,
take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Mike Chen, C-H-E-N, and you can probably find him all over the place. I forgot to mention. Wait, Mike, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, do you have a website? I actually forgot to look. I was just find you on YouTube.
Yeah, it's eatwithmikey.com.
And it's M-I-K-E-Y.
Yep,
M-I-K-E-Y. EatWithMikey.com. All right. Thank you so much, Mike. And we'll talk to you later.
Yeah. Thanks, Tracy. Bye-bye.